the Create and Thrive Podcast, episode 41. Megan Ekman on the sweet spot between what you want to make and what your customers buy.
And so last year was the first year that I was full-time, and I hired my partner. And we ran the sums, December 31st for the year. And for the first time ever, I actually met my financial goal.
Woohoo! I'm Jess Van Den, and this is the Create and Thrive Podcast. A former school teacher, I turned my handmade hobby into a thriving business, and I also teach other creatives how to do the same. My goal is to help you learn how to turn your creative hobby into a thriving, profitable business. So let's get learning. Hey Thrivers, it's Jess here. Welcome to another episode of the Create and Thrive Podcast. It's great to have you with me today. What have you been up to this week? Well, this week we've just had Australia Day here in Australia, and along with that, two other things happen. One is a friend of ours has his birthday the day before, and there's also a thing called the Hottest 100. There's a radio station here called Triple J. It's one of the national government-funded radio stations, which sounds kind of naff when you say it like that, but it's actually really popular amongst the youth, and I've been listening to it since I was a teenager. Still haven't outgrown it. And they do a countdown every year. People vote for the best, you know, their favourite songs, and they do the countdown of the Hottest 100 songs. I'm sure lots of radio stations do that, but it's a big national event for people who listen to the station, and it's always on Australia Day. So we get together with our friends every year and celebrate our friend's birthday and everything else. And so that's what we've been doing for the last few days. It's been pretty fun up in the city. Nick and I went out for a really nice dinner to celebrate selling our house in England. We had a degustation meal, which is the first time I've ever had one of those properly, and it was pretty amazing. I would definitely recommend doing that at least once, possibly only once, because it's not cheap. But it was worth it for the experience to do it once in celebrating a big thing that's happened in our lives. And we're just, celebrating that and still in the planning stages of our house. Hopefully that'll be all organized in the next few weeks, and we might actually start making some progress forward with other people. I'm sure I'll keep you updated on that. So what's happening this week? Well, with the podcast, I'm talking to my friend Megan Ekman. Those of you who've been around the Create and Thrive world for a few years might remember Megan. She used to be the assistant editor of Create and Thrive until her business got too popular and was doing too well, and she had to leave me because she was too busy, which is a good reason to have to move on. So I invited her onto the show this week because I've been keeping an eye on her, obviously, and what her business has been doing. And she's really, her business has really morphed in the last few years from what it was originally. Megan is a fine artist and an illustrator, went to, university and did fine arts. And originally she was focused on selling her actual artwork, but she had this bright idea to start turning her artworks, which are kind of, she works with pen, into embroidery kits or embroidery patterns. And unbeknownst to her, that was the best move she could have made because that, her business exploded. But it wasn't without tension because she's an artist and she wanted to sell her art. And she wasn't anticipating, turning a business into something that was for crafters, making kits and patterns and stuff for crafters. So for her, it's been quite a shift in the way she's looked at her business, and it was quite a struggle for a while to come to terms with that. So we talk about that in this episode. We focus on a lot of things. We cover a lot of ground, but the core is really this struggle between, that finding that sweet spot between what you want to create and what your customers actually buy. And that's what we're focusing on a lot in this episode. And I think this is a really, really important thing for everybody to recognize when we make that transition to having a business. Or even as, as our business changes and grows over time, that we have to in some ways be led by what our customers are telling us they want, but also keep true to ourselves and the core of our business. And we talk about that tension a lot in this episode. Before I bring the interview up and we get started, though, I just wanted to let you guys know, if you've been looking into joining me for Setup Shop, registration closes very soon. It closes Sunday, midday, Australian Eastern Standard Time, which if you're in America or Canada or the UK or Europe, means you need to be signed up by Saturday evening. The time will vary, obviously, depending on where you are. But yeah, so if you want to join us for the next run of Setup Shop, class starts on Monday, February 1st. And make sure you don't miss out and sign up. And I hope you can join us. We've got a great cohort of people already signed up for the class. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to be taking that 30-day journey through everything you need to know to start and grow a handmade business online. And, if you want to know more about it, head over to the blog, createandthrive.com, look for courses and look for Setup Shop. And there's lots of feedback there from past students, so you can get a bit of an idea of what the course has meant to them and the difference it's made in the growth of their businesses. It's been a real honor to take so many people through this journey over the last few years, and I've been running the course for a few years now, and it's just so much fun. I love helping. It's really aimed at beginners or people who are just getting going. You might even have a shop set up, but you really don't know what you're doing. And if that's you, if that sounds familiar, then this is the course for you, basically. One of my alumni, Jane, said, thanks to your Setup Shop course, I have no fears or worries about starting my online shop. I have a plan. I am well prepared. And Tanya Robinson actually said that Setup Shop has been the most productive 30 days she's had in her business so far. So that's pretty amazing. Thank you so much to all of my past students who've let me know what the course has meant to them. So let's dive into this interview with Megan. And as always, if you have any comments or feedback, please do head over to the blog, look for episode 41, leave a comment. Or head over to iTunes and leave some feedback there, or tweet me, or leave it on the Facebook page. There's lots of ways to get in touch. I'd love to hear from you. Or email me, of course, as well. Okay, let's get started with this interview. I hope you enjoy it and get a lot out of it, as always. Okay, guys, I'm here with Megan Ekman, my friend, who is an illustrator and artist. Welcome, Megan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. It's been a while since we've chatted.
Yes.
So before we kind of dive into the nitty-gritty, would you be able to take us on a bit of a journey of your creative career path so far?
Sure. So I have formal training as a painter and a drawer. I got my degrees in that. And the one stipulation to getting those degrees from my mother was I had to start a business before I graduated. So I started my business, Studio Me, in 2009, just a few months before I graduated. And I really didn't do much with it. I met the stipulation, and that was about it. So we moved, my partner and I, to California immediately after graduation so he could get his graduate degree, his master's in photography. And if you know anything about the Bay Area in California, which is where we were, it's the most expensive place to live in America.
Wow, okay.
So I immediately... For two artists. Yes, I immediately had to get a job. Mm-hmm. And I got my first retail job working at a bookstore. Unfortunately, I only worked there for 8 months because the bookstore declared bankruptcy.
Would that have been Borders by any chance?
It was Borders, yes. But what I learned while there really set in motion everything else. Mm-hmm. So they taught me how not to run a business.
Right.
Their selling practices were appalling. Their customer service was deplorable. And their ethics were really questionable. Mm-hmm. And it did not take long for it to wear me out creatively, emotionally, just mentally. I had no energy. I didn't want to do any artwork. I just couldn't take it. Mm-hmm. So when they closed, I was the only one dancing out of the building. That I couldn't work for anyone else anymore. I'm not made that way. And that was what really made me look hard at what I hadn't been doing for my business and say, it's time to step it up. So I really started working on getting my artwork ready to sell. I got into a few shops, did a few fairs, was making enough to make rent. And then one night I got bored and I turned one of my illustrations into an embroidery.
Yes.
And I put it on my blog and went to bed. And the next morning, it had kind of exploded. And everyone wanted to make this thing.
That's pretty cool.
It was, but it was frustrating. Nobody wanted to buy the drawing. Yeah. They all wanted to make this. And so the next 2 years, I put myself into a terrible position where I ran a business with really two different things in it. Mm-hmm. I had prints and originals, and I tried to convince people about limited editions. And then I had embroidery kits. And I got really mad because the embroidery kits would sell like nobody's business. I mean, these things would just fly. And I wanted people to buy my artwork.
Yeah.
And I fought it for 2 years. And my partner just said, you know, it'd be so much easier if you just focused on one thing. And you're not having fun with your art anymore. Because I kept thinking, this is going to sell. You know, hedgehogs are in. I should do hedgehogs.
Yep.
And then it wouldn't sell. And, you know, I've lost all my integrity at that point, and I was mad at myself for that. And the things that I love to do, these glorious, elaborate portraits out of teeny tiny little dots. Nobody wants to buy that. So it was a really hard decision, you know. So it's been 2 years now, and I just kind of pulled the cord and said, I'm just going to go all in. I stopped selling the prints. I gave myself like the permission to just play with art again. Mm-hmm. And went all in the embroidery kits. And ever since then, it's been crazy how easy it is now. So yeah, that's sort of how, sometimes I'm embarrassed because, you know, you go to school for one thing. And I guess most other people who go to art school end up having normal jobs. And then I now say, well, I have a fine art degree, but I'm selling embroidery kits. But that's what I do now.
Mm-hmm. So there's kind of that disconnect between what you expected your career to be and what it actually has turned out to be.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing I took away from what you were saying there, you know, you said nobody wants to buy your art. They are buying your art. They're just buying it in a different format.
Yes. It's still... So when you go... This is like the thing I still hang up about. It's the fine art versus the craft.
Yep.
So I am putting into motion, we can talk about it later with some of the questions I know you have it planned, putting into motions a plan to focus on the fine art and sell it the way I really want to sell it. Mm-hmm. While still allowing myself to make all of the, I don't want to say low art, but in terms of like skill, it's not as complicated to make the embroidery designs as it is to make, you know, gigantic portraits. So that's what I'm still wrestling with. But yes, no, they are still buying my artwork. It's just, it is still the silly artwork. I mean, I made silly artwork in college, and that was what I was known for.
Yeah.
So it's still that.
Yeah, I mean, your stuff is, it's got that kind of quirky, almost sort of pseudo-fantasy vibe going on. That's probably not the best word for it, but...
It's whimsical. Yeah. I mean, I have a really... For growing up in America, you know, I didn't have cable growing up, so I have a very British sense of humor. due to all the public television that comes over from Britain, but it was like 10 years too late,
yep.
You know, because we don't get it until much later. So I grew up on like 80s reruns.
That's the same as Australia, yeah.
Yeah. You know, like Keeping Up Appearances. I watched it for way too long. Fawlty Towers. So it's a very unusual, punny, British, whimsical sort of theme going on.
Does your stuff sell particularly well in England?
In England and Australia, yes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You guys get it.
We get it, yeah. The Australian and English sense of humor is very similar, but yes. The American sense of humor is very different, generally.
It's very different, because I always have people ask, can I get the, do you have any naughty ones?
Yep.
Or any swear ones? And I said, I just can't do it. No. I've tried. It's not my personality.
No. And that's cool that you embrace that and not just follow, the what other people might expect or want.
Yes.
That doesn't feel right for you. And I think that can be a challenge for a lot of us as we grow our businesses, is kind of that tension between what people want and what we know we want to do and what we don't want to do as well.
Yes.
Yeah. So what would you say has been the biggest challenge you've overcome so far? Is it that, is it kind of overcoming that tension, holding back from making the decision that, yes, you're just going to run with that direction?
That is one of the biggest ones. Yes. And coupled with that, it's like the little known secret. Everybody has imposter complex, but for me, I am not a crafter. Mm. And nobody believes me, but I don't have boxes of like glitter and sequins and those Pinterest like how to's.
Yeah.
Doesn't interest me at all. Like, I just want to buy it. Like, I don't.
Yep.
I have no desire to make it. But I sell. I tell people, I'm not a crafter. I'm an enabler.
Yep.
So it's kind of like, it's like the gym teacher, right? Those who can't do teach.
Yep.
I can't make this. And I don't like enjoy sewing as much as everybody who makes my kits does. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like, those who can't make kits, you know, like it's coming to terms with that as well. But what I've heard from other people who are not, they are business owners, but not necessarily a craft business owner, is that I am very lucky in that sense because it allows me to look at it from an outsider's point of view. So I had to reverse engineer everything, thinking of it not as a crafter, but as somebody coming to it fresh. And that really allowed me to kind of have a distance and not get too emotionally attached to anything involved.
Yeah. Which can mean that you can make sort of more rational decisions rather than emotionally based decisions when it comes to your business.
Yep.
Which can
And that was hard with the art. Yeah, I couldn't do that before, but I could do it with this.
That's interesting because I think a lot of us in the art craft world really struggle with that emotional aspect, because most of us, I think, who do sell our craft start off doing it just for ourselves as a hobby or something like that. And we are emotionally attached to it. That's what it fulfills, an emotional need. And when we make that switch to actually trying to sell it, it kind of can be a bit confronting, because we need to take a step back and look at our stuff more objectively rather than emotionally.
Yeah. I think I have it easy since it's kits. It's not a finished, if I were trying to sell a finished thing.
Yeah.
Which I have had people try to buy them from me at fairs. They're like, I don't want to make it. I just want to buy it. And I said, you can't afford it. They're like, but the kit's only 20. How much could it be? I'm like, add some zeros. Yeah. Like,
all that time.
You can't have it. I need it.
Yeah. I remember my zine that I did bespoke, I actually embroidered a sign like I printed out the font in big, like it was probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 inches high at the highest point, and embroidered that. And I did it really close, like almost thread upon thread. So it was really, and I was like, man, by the time I finished that, I didn't want to touch any embroidery for a long time. It takes so much time. So yeah, people couldn't afford it. You're right. So,
no, I know. It breaks my heart when I see them on Etsy for $20. Oh,
yeah.
It took you too long.
I know. It's terrible. And yeah, I think I almost want to shake people when I see them selling stuff, like stuff that's so time intensive for that sort of low price. I'm like, what are you doing? Do your sums. Do the maths. This is not sustainable. And hopefully they'll learn that lesson as time goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something we all have to learn for ourselves. So what would you say has been kind of your biggest successful fist pump moment in your business?
So this one actually just happened at the end of December, like the 31st. My partner and I actually ended up hiring him last year. He's my contractor. I can't afford his health insurance yet. We're getting there. So last year was the first time that I ran my business completely full time. I'd been doing some other sort of like VA work and tutorials online. And so last year was the first year that I was full time and I hired my partner and we ran the sums, December 31st for the year. And for the first time ever, I actually met my financial goal.
Woohoo!
And it was big. I mean, we had increased it almost halfway through the year. We realized we were going to blow through what we had earlier set. So we made, it was over double what we'd done the year before. And that was just from taking on my partner, like taking him on. Mm-hmm. We really were able to just kind of explode the business. And so, we just kind of celebrated that day. We were very excited.
As you should be. That's amazing.
Yeah. We took 2 weeks off. That was our celebration. Christmas burned us out. So
I can imagine.
Did nothing. People kept asking, like, you know, I said I was taking 2 weeks off and everybody goes, what are you doing? That's so exciting. I said, I am napping, eating a gingerbread house that I'm going to make. And reading books. Like, don't even bother trying to come find me. It's nothing exciting. Just eating and sleeping.
Recovering.
Yes.
Hibernating. That's fantastic. Congratulations.
Glorious.
So have you set an even loftier goal for this year then? Financial goal?
This one's going to be even harder to reach. So we looked at what we took in and then after subtracting the business expenses, we looked at then what was profit. Before I had just had sort of a number in my head, I wanted to reach, you know, six figures. I wanted to finally say, you know, it was like something my mother had never done. I took in six figures. And so this year, what we'd like to do is actually take in that same amount, but as profit.
Yes.
So it's a challenge. It all looks really good until you actually subtract your expenses and then go, oh.
And pay your taxes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And then you're like, oh, half of that kind of just went away.
So true.
We did really well, but we didn't. It's really disappointing sometimes. So, yeah, this year our goal is then 100,000 in profit, which still spread over two people, that's really not that much. But we'll take it.
Absolutely.
Coming from, you know, the Bay Area, San Francisco, San Jose, where, you know, you pay, well, it's over 2,000 now for about 500 square feet for an apartment. So, you know, we went from that, like having $25 extra dollars a month to now trying to make, you know, 50,000 each in profit. It's a big jump.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. And it's pretty amazing that, you know, it's kind of happening quickly. I think, you know, business growth for a lot of people often is a curve. Like it's quite a flat curve for a long time and then suddenly it kicks up.
Yes.
And then it just goes up and up and up, we hope.
Yeah, so this is now the sixth year that I've officially been in business. It's only been maybe three that I took it seriously, but
yeah,
it's a much longer process than most people want to tell you.
Yes, exactly true. And I think it's really important for people starting out to realize that you have to be in it for the long haul.
It's a long game.
It really is. And it's not something, you know, the people who make it in the first year or so are very rare. It does happen, but it's usually some weird combination of they've just hit on the right thing at the right time and been featured in the right places, and that kind of explodes everything. But, or they have heaps of seed money and can, like, advertise out the wazoo.
Yeah, I always love the people who, yeah, I read, like, Inc. magazines, and, yeah, and they're all like, whoa, we got $1 million from our family. That would have been nice.
Yeah, I reckon.
Got a pat on the back for mine.
Yeah, it's so funny, like, when you, like, I have that whole weird imposter syndrome too, in that my education, I was trained as a scientist, then I was trained as a teacher. So I have no arts education or business education at all. And so when you kind of turn around at Christmas dinner and sit down with your extended family and they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I've just started this business selling jewelry online. They kind of look at you like, what? How did that happen? But then, you know, as time goes on and you can start saying, well, yeah, I brought in six figures with my business this year, and they kind of go, really?
Jealous, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's that's a nice point where I think, you know, like, people don't really take you seriously until you're making money a lot of the time, because they don't really understand what you're doing. It's still so out of left field, really, for most people.
There are still so many people, I honestly don't think my partner's parents know how much, you know, like, how well he's doing there. They still send job offers to him and such. So it's really, yeah, people don't take you seriously until you, sadly, have kind of like a tax return to prove it.
Yeah, yeah. Which is a shame, but I always say, you know, don't let the haters or the people who don't believe in you stop you. Prove them wrong.
Yeah.
Build the business, prove them wrong, and then go, well, look, you know, look what I've achieved. And you have, you know, and that's just another level of enjoyment on the top of the fact that you're self-employed and doing what you want with your life, which most people don't ever get the chance to do. So it's pretty special.
Correct.
Mm. So do you have, and I think we've probably established that the answer is yes, but do you have doubts as to your future creative direction? And are there things that you want to achieve but haven't found the time for yet?
That's a big yes. Mm-hmm. So ultimately what I would like to do is get my business to the point where I am solely doing design work for Studio Me. Everything else is taken care of. And that then allows me to do what I truly believe I am best at, which is painting and drawing, and getting the gallery shows that I want. You know, it's kind of in my 5-year plan that we get a team on board. My partner, you know, he's just made a photograph, and that's what he should be doing. Mm-hmm. The fine art, he's not sociable enough to do anything involving brides or children.
Yep.
Anything of that would be useful, you know. it's been difficult. So I always have doubts about, you know, you have this business and how to position it such that I don't want it to become that job that I regret. Because then it'd be the same as having a cubicle job.
Yeah.
Saying, when I retire, I'll finally get to do what I wanted to do. I want to be able to do what I want to do, and just, I can still have the business running. You know, I can just be the designer for it. Somebody else can be CEO. Somebody else can be payroll. You know, all of that. And there's also a part of me that understands my business might, it could do two things. It could either die. You know, we're kind of in a wave of of handmade appreciation right now.
Yes.
There's nothing to say it's going to last beyond 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so that terrifies me. That's why I'm, you know, trying to like a 5-year plan of getting to the fine art side.
Yeah.
As a backup. I could also branch out and I could even, sell it to somebody else mm-hmm. that they could run it. Or it could evolve into its own bigger sort of capsule empire of a like lifestyle brand.
Yeah.
So we're kind of keeping all the things open. And I know that it's probably not what most of the people you interview would say. Would be like, it might die. I might sell it. but it gives me a certain freedom to think of those options. Mm. It gives me a certain freedom to think of those options. Because somebody once told me, it was really good advice, you are not your business.
Mm.
You know, you can't be so attached to it. If something happened to it, you obviously are going to live on. You have to be able to separate yourself if the time comes. If somebody offered you a whole lot of money for your business, yeah, I might sell it to them. If I knew it was going to be run properly and it allowed me to do something else, you know, entrepreneurs do it all the time. I mean, that's what makes them entrepreneurs. They start and sell things very quickly. And so part of that, you know, is what's, helping me face the doubts of where my creativity might go in the next 5 years.
Definitely. And yeah, I think that whole not you are not your business thing is really difficult for crafters because mm-hmm. we are very attached and we, you know, a lot of people, it's all about, and it's part of what makes it special is that it's all about you making your stuff and that, you know, you can decide that it's not necessarily a business. I think somebody, I can't remember who said this once, but like it's not a business if you're working in it constantly, like it's a job. Whereas if it's something you can separate from yourself and sell, then that's a business. So that doesn't mean that you have to separate it from yourself or that you have to, but you, yeah, kind of looking at that a little bit differently. You know, if you have to work every day to keep your business going, it's kind of more of a job than a business because you can't kind of pass stuff off to other people or jobs off to other people. And that's okay if that's what you want and that's what you're happy to do. But it's just kind of, you have to be honest about that and realize that that's the reality of the situation. So
yeah, I mean, it's for some people, depending on what their craft is, there's no telling, sadly, how long you have in it in terms of your own health.
Yes.
You know, you hear all the terrible stories of people who get book deals for a crochet book and they get that, you know, like carpal tunnel or the repeats, what is it, like repetitious motion.
Oh, yep.
Injury. Yeah.
Repetitive motion.
So injury. It's stuff like that that you need to also keep in mind in terms of how you can separate yourself.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And I know, you know, I've had injuries that have prevented me from making for a while and stuff like that. And it can really be a problem. And having Nick, working for me, obviously, helps alleviate that problem because I've got the second person who can take mm-hmm. up that part of the work for me if I can't do it. And I mean, he does most of the making now, most of the parts Ooh. Of the making now. Yeah, it's great. So, which frees me up to do the stuff that I'm good at, which is, you know, marketing and customer service and those sorts of things. Everybody has their strengths and outsourcing, even if it's just to your partner, the stuff that, you know, you can, because it's not your strong point necessarily. Like, obviously, I can make jewelry and I enjoy it, but mm-hmm. I'm the one who does the design. And if I'm always making stuff, I don't have time or energy to design new things. So,
correct.
Yeah, it's all about finding that balance and trying to get help, I think, as things grow. And you can't grow past a certain point if you are just yourself. If you're doing everything, it's naturally limited. Which, again, might be okay if that's what you're happy to do. But if you do want to grow it, there does come a point where you have to try to build a team, as you were saying before, to help you out with the aspects of things that you can give to someone else to take care of.
Yeah, we're at that breaking point right now. The holidays revealed that. So we are actually, come March, going to be hiring a packer because I really don't like packing anymore. The joy is gone. But it's something, you know, that I can easily outsource to a college student. They can come into my, you know, my apartment and put all the kits together for me. I can pay them really, you know, minimum wage better, and it frees up so much time for me. We have since implemented safety measures, but I did.
Oh, I remember you hurt yourself quite badly.
Yeah, I took a really nice. Yeah, rotary cutters are sharp.
Oh,
I'll just put that out there. I attempted to take off most of the tip of my index finger.
Ouch.
It still looks really. They didn't do a good job putting it back on. and that was sort of when I told my partner, I'm like, I just don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. I shouldn't be. I work with needles and scissors. Like, it shouldn't be an injury on the job in this business. So we'll have somebody else get injured instead. No, we made safety equipment. It's okay now.
Yeah. No, that's cool.
We have safety rulers.
It's funny. Nick's been doing the packing for me for, God, 3 or 4 years now. And I think it was about a few months ago, he was away or something, and I had to pack stuff. And I'm like, am I doing this right? He's been doing it for so long that I'm like, how do I tie a good bow? My God, they look awful compared to his. And yeah, it's funny. But yeah, definitely getting help with those things makes a big difference. So moving on from that, then my next question is, how do you balance your work and the rest of your life? Like, what does a typical day look like for you? And do you have a typical day?
As of this year, yes. So we learned, well, my partner saw me, he watched me burn out at Christmas mm-hmm. time, just absolutely meltdown. And he didn't want to see that again, and I couldn't go through it again. So we are very lucky that we do not have any children. Mm-hmm. We don't have that obligation. We have one cat who is the equivalent of a 2-year-old. And she is like us, and she loves routine. This cat will keep us to a schedule. And that's exactly how we balance it. So since we both work on the business now, we created a schedule for each other and ourselves. And my partner loves spreadsheets. So he color coded this thing, and he and the cat keep me to it. So most days now are typical. Yeah. So the cat's the alarm clock. I get up about 6 and then the cat immediately goes back to sleep.
Of course.
Yeah, it's very nice. So I schedule my day around things that are important to me. So the first thing that I do is I actually work out for about an hour and a half. Sometimes longer in the summer with cycling. And then I am most productive from 10 to noon. And that is actually now when I schedule creative time.
Yeah.
So certain days of the week, it is designing new kits for Studio Me. And other days of the week, it is my time to paint or just sketch in notebooks, write whatever I want. It's 2 hours, no guilt attached. I used to feel guilty about not working.
Yeah.
So I would work sun up till way past sundown, you know, every day, just slog it out. And it wasn't helping me at all.
No.
So I have 2 hours, guilt-free, you know. Jeff has the same time. His time frame is the same. You know, he gets to do whatever he wants for those hours. And then after lunch, that's when we really sit down and kind of work. So there is one day of the week where Jeff does all of the photography for the week. So that's all of our Instagram, Facebook ads, blog posts, products, everything. He does all that, since that's what his degree is in.
Yep.
You know, I sit down, I answer all the emails, I place all the orders. You know, we kind of really just, well, it seems like a long time. I work for like 2 hours. And then I'm like a dog and I need walkies. So yeah. I have to go out and walk for about 30 minutes and just like leave the desk, leave the work, get some fresh air. And then come back and we work again until about, 6 at night. And then, we have dinner together. We will work for then another hour and a half to an hour. We have to stop at 9. That was the new rule. So for this year, all work stops at 9 p.m. And, we'll then, you know, play games, puzzles, watch a movie, anything that's not work related.
Yep.
We also now take, it sounds so glamorous, we take Sundays off. Sundays are not allowed, to do anything work related, so I generally do crossword puzzles and lay in bed for a very long time.
Yep.
But again, it's like, there's no guilt. Yes. You know, used to work 7 days a week, and any time I wasn't working, you know, since I am kind of responsible, or I feel responsible for bringing in all the money, it was sort of like, I'm letting Jeff down, I'm not working right now. There wasn't a sale today, so obviously it's my fault, and I have to get up and go on Facebook, because obviously that will solve the problem, you know? So this year so far, it's been really, really helpful to actually have schedule. And like I said, the cat is the alarm clock. She knows when it's time. She will herd you downstairs. Like, now it's dinner. Now it's lunch. Now is, you know, she also demands playtime.
That's good.
This cat demands it. So there are breaks. Like, if we don't go for a walk, I have to play with the cat for half an hour.
Yep.
So, you know, I have it really easy now for work-life balance. We schedule vacations, which is, oh man, we didn't take a vacation last year till I think October. It was embarrassing. So this year we've scheduled vacations. It's really helped, but I know so many other people have it much harder, you know, with kids or with other family. And at this point we have it really easy.
Yeah. That's cool. I can relate to that. Like, I'm at that point with my business as well. Like, Sundays, I'm offline on Sundays. I don't check my email. I don't do any social media. I lie in bed and read for most of the day, usually. Then I might go for a bike ride or a walk or do some yoga. Like you said, there's no guilt because it's like, I've done my work.
It takes a long time to get there, but once you get to that, like, no guilt, it's just like, this is what normal people feel on the weekend, you know?
And I can really relate to what you said about the pressure. Like, I think, you know, the pressure to be the breadwinner. Because I've been the breadwinner, since, a long time now. And until last year, I think the early part of last year, we did have a small rental income from the house that Nick owned in the UK because we had a renter in there. I mean, it wasn't enough to live on, but it was a small amount of money coming in. So that was kind of a little bit of a relief, knowing that there was always something that, you know, would at least buy our food if we really did nothing but eat. But at the same time, when you are the one responsible for your entire income, it can be very stressful because, you feel like if I'm not working, I'm letting the family down or letting the team down, and it's up to me to make this work.
Yeah.
And if I don't, then we don't have money. So, I can really, really relate to
that. I never understood, I'm sure it's universal here in America. It's always like, the man was the breadwinner.
Yeah,
it's
.
Why did you want that? Like, I'll give it back to you anytime you want.
Yeah.
And that was the hard part about being in the Bay, was everybody that I knew who was a business owner, their husband was in Google, wasn't Apple, wasn't Microsoft, you know. And so they're like, oh, this is just fun money. And just like, oh, that would be nice. Yeah. Like, this is my eat money, you know.
Yes. And I think that's why I've always been really strong about, you know, there's nothing wrong with making money if you have a, this is your livelihood. You know, if you want to make a living out of this, you need to just step up and go and own it and say, I'm going to charge what I'm worth and what my work is worth because I need to eat and pay my rent and go on holiday. Yeah. And that's just the way it is. It's like any other job or any other business. You expect to be paid what you're worth. And I think it's really important to realize that and own that for yourself. And hopefully, if things go well, you can reach the stage that you and I have reached, which is where things are kind of rolling. Like, you still have to work, but it's almost like you know, you've gotten up to speed. It's like you're accelerating a car, and you've hit 100. In I guess it would be 60 in the US highway. You hit highway speed, and you're just kind of rolling. You still have to expend gas, and but you don't have to push quite so hard on the accelerator.
Yes.
And you can have brakes and stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's a really nice place to be.
Yes. Definitely.
Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about marketing quickly. What has been the best marketing move you think you've made for your business?
So this has come recently. We changed over. We use Shopify as our platform. Mm-hmm. And we finally figured out how to get that little pop-up that says, join the mailing list.
Oh, yes.
Now, what was the biggest advantage, because I've had that thing for years, and we had it as a pop-up for almost a year, but we played with what we offered. Mm. So, at first, I offered a percentage off. Then we offered free shipping, and then we offered a free pattern. Now, in my mind, nobody should want the free pattern, only because hardly many people buy the patterns on the site itself. Because most people who come there are newcomers to embroidery, and so they're going to want a kit.
Yeah. However, despite all logic, that is what makes it so we get almost 20 signups a day. It's bizarre. I can't answer it. But it was that testing that helped us. You know, you hear people say, like, free shipping, that's what it's going to be across the board. I've had free shipping sales in my shop. I've tried it 3 times now. No one will buy. No, like, crickets. It's hysterical. And then you offer something else, and it's completely different. Like, for me, free shipping would do it for me. My customer doesn't even care. Doesn't. Even like 10% off, doesn't care. But put in a free pattern, and it's like everybody and their mom wants it. Even though I doubt anyone actually uses it, it's something about the free.
So, getting a free object almost.
Yeah. So, you know, it was something. You know, we thought once we had the little pop-up, that'd be enough. And then we kind of just played with it, and we kept playing with it, and it was really figuring out what people wanted. And it's something that you can't really ask your audience, you know, to test. You know, you can't just put it on Facebook. Nobody answers questions.
You won't get an answer that is true. They'll answer you, but what they say they want is not generally what they want. The thing I would say is don't be afraid to test that email marketing incentive, because your email marketing is always going to be your biggest sales driver.
Yeah. Definitely. That's a really, really good piece.
Yeah, so for the first time ever now, I actually have to start looking at how much I have to pay MailChimp, because I've never had enough people. I got the warning the other day because I was going to send out, I had like a correction to make, and it's like, you can't do that. You don't have enough. But, oh my gosh, I've almost hit the limit.
Like, yeah, I pay MailChimp quite a bit every month. And Nick's like, wow, that bill's getting bigger, especially because it's in US dollars, and, you know, the Australian dollar has tanked over the last 6 months. So anything we have to pay for in US dollars is now way more expensive. But on the bright side, I sell on Etsy in US dollars, so we make more money.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so it works. Yeah. And I say, yeah, but look how much money we made off that mailing list. Like, a vast quantity. of our income is made off of. It is
back.
So it's definitely the most cost effective mail advertising / marketing tool that I have, and it's incredibly powerful for both of my businesses, definitely. Mm-hmm. And what you said about the offer is really interesting. Definitely playing around with that, and it's going to be different in different for different people.
Oh, definitely.
So you can only work out what it is by trying it and seeing what works for you.
Yeah, I mean, I know some people who do. You know, the free, it's like a free wallpaper for your phone, mm-hmm. or a guide to how to wear your jewelry.
Yeah.
I think the best one I've seen is a woman who does headshots for business owners, mm-hmm. and hers is a list of tips and tricks to look your best. Yeah. So it's like just ways to pose yourself and ways to stand. And anybody they're interested in getting photos from her is going to want to read that, because they're going to, if they're paying money, they're going to want to get the best value for it. So it's a no-brainer at all.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Definitely. Cool. Okay, so let's kind of start wrapping up, and I'd like to ask you to share one piece of advice you'd like to give fellow makers or artists about running a successful creative business.
So I would say the thing I've kind of learned is, I'm learning the hard way. I've shot myself in the foot so many times last year with this. Don't make what your customer says they want. I did this twice last year and both flopped so horribly, it's embarrassing. I emailed all my wholesale shops and I am allowing them to swap out this product. Because it would not sell. Mm-hmm. And that's something I've never had to do before. And it's costing me a lot of money. But this way I don't lose shops.
Yes.
Fans will tell you what they think they want. Mm-hmm. However, that does not mean that it is going to be what they will buy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy enough for people to give their opinions. So I had people who said, I'd come out with these stuffed animal kits mm-hmm. because they said they wanted something harder to sew. Then those were too hard because you needed a sewing machine. And as I learned, most people don't have sewing machines in the U.S. And this didn't even occur to me because my mother, who can't sew, owned one. And I figured if she had one, everybody has to own one. So then they said, we want something in between an embroidery kit and a stuffed animal. So I said, okay. And I made ornaments that you can hand sew, but you still stuff it a little bit to make it kind of plush.
Yeah.
And I had all the shops. They wanted them. They were raving about, like, can't wait to get these. You know, everybody, they voted on what shapes they wanted. I made them so kids could make them. I had kids test them for me. They loved them. And then they came out. Nobody bought them. I couldn't even move them at fairs at buy two, get one free.
Wow.
It was embarrassing. So what I've learned is people will tell you what they think they want. But that doesn't necessarily mean that when it comes to market, they're actually going to buy it. You know, people come, it's kind of like those concept cars that car companies make.
Yep.
It's all this extreme stuff that people wish for. But nobody's going to actually buy it. They want you to make it so they can see it. So what I've taken from that is, you know, I still let my fans vote. Mm-hmm. Right now they're voting on a new set of designs. I've got 8. I'm letting them narrow it down to 4. However, I still have final say.
Yes.
If I have a sense something's not going to sell, because I don't have many shops in that area, or, you know, it's just not really an audience that I've tapped into yet, I don't want to spend the money and run the same risk that I have, you know, do the same thing I did this year.
Yeah.
The one good piece of advice that my partner said, if anybody's a car lover, Lamborghini. Lamborghini makes what Lamborghini wants. They're not out there to sell cars. They like to just know what they want to make. And so I'm trying to get back to that with mine. with embroidery kits is I'm going to make what I want to make, not necessarily what the customer says they want. Mm. And I'm going to trust that what I feel they want is going to be pretty darn close to what they want. Mm-hmm. And I can tweak it from there. You know, with this business, I am allowed to ride the trends. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. There's no integrity lost, you know. I work with modcloth.com, mm-hmm. and they said, hedgehogs and sloths are in. We need these from you. And I did it, and they sold. It's crazy. It's fine. but it's still putting it as I would make it, not necessarily as the customer said that they would want to embroider hedgehogs.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a trap I see so many people fall into is you put out these surveys to your customers. What do you want? Listen to them, but don't listen to them. Trust yourself more that you know what the right answer is.
Yep.
I think Daniel Laporte said it in that, you already know all the answers. Mm. You just don't trust yourself.
That's a really good quote. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, for me, and I think for people who are successful, you kind of, it's almost like mind reading in a way. Like, yep. you have to look at what your customers are actually putting down money for.
Yep.
And go, okay, well, let's make more of that stuff or more stuff in line with that and see how it goes. And that's what I've done with my business. I haven't done what that people have said they wanted. I've done what they've actually put down money for, and it works. So yeah, that's a really, really good piece of advice. So looking towards the future, you say, you know, you talked about your 5-year plan. Where do you see yourself and your business in 5 years?
So I want to have a team in place. Mm-hmm. I'm actually trying to hire my mother currently. She just retired, so I'm trying to snag her to be my wholesale manager.
Nice.
she's good at wrangling people. So, you know, I'd like a team so that all I am doing is the design work. Mm-hmm. I have somebody else stocking shops. I've got somebody shipping. We're looking at distribution centers. Mm-hmm. So kind of like how Amazon runs, you know, there's somebody there. We just ship them off to a place. They sit on a shelf, and when orders come in from my shop, they mail them out. Mm-hmm. We are looking, I want to be painting more, you know, making more of an income from gallery shows, you know, being able to say, you know, oh, I've got to fly across the country for an opening. and then my partner and I are actually looking at getting the business to a point where we can live overseas for an extended period of time and that the business continues to run. You know, it's just me sending in files, you know, and approving things and whatnot, but that we have enough of a base in the U.S. and then maybe somebody overseas that just kind of keeps things running for us.
That's a cool dream. I like it.
It's a big, crazy dream, but
I reckon you can do it. I reckon
we've moved so much. There aren't very many places left in the U.S. we want to live. So that's why we're looking overseas now.
Any particular place, or is that still up in the air?
Well, it's very hard to move. We could do, we'd have to do, visas. We looked at getting, you know, like residency or something. And Sweden is pretty much, and Estonia are the only places that really just kind of welcome everyone.
Right.
Otherwise you really have to move with the business if you want to even look at citizenship.
Yeah.
So we might just do kind of like those 6 months tourist visas and we could go, you know, everywhere. My partner lived in Sicily for 4 years, so we actually are going to avoid Italy just because it's so laid back. I don't think I could actually, he said it takes like 6 weeks to get your internet installed, and I just can't do that. You know, it's just like, nothing runs on a schedule, and I'm way too type A. So we're going to avoid, Spain might be the same. So we might look at more Sweden, Amsterdam.
Go to Germany. Stuff will get done in Germany.
Yes. Oh, we loved Berlin. We traveled there in March last year. Yeah. We could do Germany.
Excellent. Oh, that's cool. Well, I hope you achieve that dream. I think it would be really, really fun. So can you share, I know you've shared one or two already, but can you share a quote that inspires and motivates you?
Sure. So it's a bit more practical than motivate. It actually is from my mother. And I just grew up with her always saying, all they can say is no. And, you know, I believe that I've gotten where I've gotten so far. It's a combination of being incredibly ambitious and incredibly, it's either stubborn or foolish. And I just, you know, I just email people. Most people don't think about emailing because all they can say is no. Mm-hmm. You know, I asked DMC, the thread company, I'm partnering with them now. And I just shot them an email. And when they didn't answer, I just called them and said, I'd love to work with you. You know, all they can say is no. Asking book companies if they'll do a book deal with me because all they can say is no. So it's really helped to quiet any sort of, you know, I'm still scared, but yeah, that's the worst they can say.
Yeah. That's brilliant. Why are people so afraid of no?
I know.
Is it because they think it's a failure if someone says no? I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't figured. I'm just too stubborn.
Yeah, I am too.
I have meltdowns, and my partner's seen them. He's come in when I've just been bawling my eyes out. And where some people stop, I just go, no, you know, this is, there's nothing else I can do. I can't work for other people. I'm going to have to make it work. And then you just kind of get back on and just keep going. And you just keep getting more no's until finally somebody says yes.
I think being stubborn and just, you have to have that desire deep down to push through, to make it happen. Like if it's just kind of a casual, oh, it'd be nice if this happened, it won't work.
No.
You need that fire and that. And I'm the same. I'm ridiculously stubborn. if I really want something, I will get it.
That was our trip to Germany last year. I put it on the calendar. We didn't even have any money saved for it. I just put it on the calendar. I was like, I am going. If you're not coming with, that's fine, but I'm going somehow. And we made it.
Yep, we made it happen. Yeah. And I have this weird belief, you know, that it'll all work out somehow. And, you know, somehow it will work out.
So, yeah, that's my motto in life, is everything that can go wrong will go wrong, but it will all work out in the end. Because I am that person who, when I call tech support, I break somehow their computer every time. Or like I'm the one that the DMV has suddenly lost all records for. Or in college, all of my scholarships disappeared.
Oh my God.
It's just, I am like the I'm like some sort of a virus that just like kills all technology when I come. But I've learned it all works out in the end. Yeah. It's okay.
It's okay.
Like the planes come back, you know, like I've missed all the flights, they'll come back or...
It'll all be okay.
It'll all be okay.
Yeah. And all they can say is no. I love that. That's a great one. Thank you, Megan's mom.
I got her on, if you know the website Daily Worth.
Yes.
They had a Mother's Day one, and I sent in that quote, and I got her onto the website.
Awesome.
And she didn't even realize it was her quote.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, all the other ones were like touchy-feely and minus. Yeah.
Practical is good.
She had a business degree.
Yeah. Yeah. Good role model, perhaps, to learn from.
Stockbroker.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Definitely have to prove with money then in that case.
Yes.
Yes, yes. So, thank you so much for coming on the show today. It's been a wonderful chat. Before I let you go, where can we find you online?
So this year, I really put most of my effort into just one social media. Mm-hmm. So the way you'll get the most interesting updates, I am on Instagram, mm-hmm. and it's at Studio MME. Mm-hmm. And then my website is just studiome.com.
Cool. Excellent. We'll put that in the show notes and people can go check out your wonderful, whimsical, quirky work. And hopefully buy an embroidery kit if you're an embroiderer. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Megan. It's been great to talk to you.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for being here with us this week, Thrivers. That was a great interview. It was so lovely to chat to Megan and about all the ins and outs of her business and her experience. I hope you resonated with, you know, something that we shared there or gave you a bit of an aha moment. If it did, please share it. Let us know. I'd love to know, you know, the impact that any episode has had on you or the thoughts that it's brought up. Just tweet me at Jess Van Den, share on the Facebook page or in the comments in the show notes. That's it for another week of the Create and Thrive podcast. Just remember, if you are wanting to join us for Setup Shop, go register now so you don't miss out. Go over to createandthrive.com and look for courses Setup Shop. And hopefully you can join us for that 30-day journey to get your handmade shop and business up and running online. I'm Jess Van Den. This is the Create and Thrive podcast. Thanks for being with me for another week, and bye for now.